State officials in Alaska are taking steps to preserve as much wildlife as possible from the effects of the biggest oil spill in U.S. history. A tanker dumped more than 250,000 barrels of crude into the waters of Prince William Sound early yesterday. The Exxon Valdez ran aground trying to avoid ice, and some of its holding tanks were ruptured. Sumner McLeish of member station KTOO in Juneau reports.
Sea otters, sea lions, and ducks have now been sighted in the massive oil spill, and there is considerable concern over the best means to prevent further ecological damage in Prince William Sound. Denny Kelso, commissioner of Alaska's Department of Environmental Conservation, is in Valdez and says wherever possible, mechanical methods such as oil containment booms and skimmers will be used to prevent the spill from spreading.
Right now we're looking closely at what can be done to protect the most sensitive habitat areas, but this is a very large spill and there are a large number of important habitat areas in the area. This is a sensitive part of Alaska's marine environment, and you can't imagine a much worse place to have this kind of event happen.
The Port of Valdez has been closed to all tanker traffic, and the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company has reduced the flow in the Trans-Alaska Oil Pipeline to 800,000 barrels daily. That's down from 1.2 million barrels a day. For National Public Radio, this is Sumner McLeish in Juneau, Alaska.
This is a special news update on the oil spill in Valdez. I'm Sumner McLeish. Fishermen are fearful of an ecological disaster in Prince William Sound. Exxon is having problems organizing cleanup efforts and removing the remaining million barrels of oil from the supertanker Exxon Valdez. This morning, the tanker Baton Rouge began offloading some of that oil from the grounded supertanker, but so much oil spilled out of the supertanker that officials stopped the process immediately. Claire Richardson has more from Valdez.
Coast Guard Lieutenant Tripp Rice says the hull of the ship sustained massive damage when it grounded early Friday morning.
Right now, in the opinion of the naval architect who designed the vessel, with the amount of damage that was described to him, the vessel cannot be floated right now in the condition it's in. So there's going to have, when the vessel is floated, it will be after there is some significant patchwork that is done to either all or at least some of the major tanks on board.
A boom has been placed around the tanker, and the transferring of oil has been delayed. A C-130 plane from Florida is standing by in Anchorage, and Exxon wants to use the plane to drop chemical dispersant onto the slick. At a news conference this afternoon, Exxon President Frank Iorosi said he hopes to have better luck than yesterday, when calm water stopped the dispersant from breaking up the spill.
So we need to test with the larger droplets to see the effectiveness of that spray. And that'll tell us whether we could depend primarily on dispersants or mechanical pickup.
How did the hiccup test work?
It was marginal.
The people who depend on the resource-rich waters of Prince William Sound are concerned about the effects of dispersants on fish and are angry at the long delay in cleanup. Ray Cesarini owns Seahawk Seafoods in Valdez.
I'm really still concerned as why nobody bothered to try to clean up the oil before it got to the size that it got to. No booning of the ship. And I'm concerned about this disbursement method because that does get into the marine environment in the ocean. It can affect not just bottom fish, it can affect the plankton. We've got, like I said before, hundreds of millions of fry swimming out of streams right now that eat that plankton. And if they eat it, I'm thoroughly convinced they'll die.
The state is also angry at the slowness of Alyeska Pipeline officials. The commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation is Dennis Kelso. He says his department has begun an investigation.
A team looking at the overall legal alternatives that are available. And I don't mean by that to suggest that we're focusing on Alyeska, but we clearly have a written oil spill contingency plan and some legal expectations there. We have a statute to back us up. But we are going to be looking at the overall situation, and we're going to make sure that when the time comes, I have the information to make a call, and I certainly will.
Whose fault is this? Whose fault do you see this as being, or is it a combination?
Well, I don't have the information to be able to say who was at fault. And frankly, that's a legitimate and important thing to resolve. But right now, my greatest concern is keeping any more oil from going into the Sound and doing whatever can be done to maximize recovery from this point. So I don't mean to just sidestep that question. If you look at the facts, it's one of those things where you have to say, well, something serious went wrong here, and so far we haven't heard an adequate explanation. No mechanical problems. Sea conditions were good. The vessel was outside the traffic lanes. I don't know what that all means.
DEC Commissioner Dennis Kelso speaking with reporter Claire Richardson in Valdez. Kelso says Alyeska is supposed to have had a five-hour response time to any oil spill, but it reportedly took more than 14 hours for any oil containment equipment to reach the area, some 25 miles south of the port of Valdez where the supertanker was grounded. Even if the response from Alyeska had been quicker, it may not have made that much difference, according to Alyeska spokesman Chuck O'Donnell.
100,000 barrels, which was reported to us. Everything that we had out there at that point in time would not have really made all that much of a difference, just, again, because of the magnitude of it. It was going to take additional resources. That we were assured of, and those are a lot of the processes we began working on immediately through the help of both the Valdez resources and our resources out of our Anchorage office.
Governor Steve Cooper is back in Juneau today after spending most of Friday afternoon and evening in Valdez. Characterizing the oil spill as a nightmare come true, the governor said this afternoon that Alyeska Pipeline's initial response to the situation was clearly unacceptable.
I think Alyeska's response was slow and inadequate, and it's particularly ironic that it comes at a time when Alyeska was arguing that its methodology was perfectly sound. And it was engaging in an ongoing argument with the Department of Environmental Conservation that everything was okay in case this kind of situation came up. I guess we have the answer to that question.
Cooper says the spill is one of the biggest disasters in Alaska history. Like the fishermen in Valdez, Cooper says he's concerned over the potential toxicity of using chemical dispersants to sink the oil slick, but right now the governor says he sees no alternative.
Well, the dispersing agents are the only practical way to send this crude to the bottom, broken up into much smaller pieces so that it can be absorbed over time. The liability is that the use of dispersants will be toxic to marine life. It will have a very deleterious effect on the marine ecosystem. We hope it'll be temporary. In a way, we're lucky in that sense, in that the salmon runs have not arrived yet. There is a herring run there, but the salmon haven't arrived yet. And if we can get these dispersants out and the crude broken up and down to the bottom, it shouldn't have a major effect on marine life, we hope. That's about as good as it gets.
Governor Steve Cooper speaking in Juneau this afternoon. At this hour, Exxon is holding another press conference in Valdez. KTOO FM News will keep you posted through the weekend as events unfold in Prince William Sound. I'm Sumner McLeish.
Frustration is emerging in Alaska as the oil slick there continues to spread. The slick is now said to be larger than the state of Rhode Island. For a full week, Exxon has been hiring men in boats, says Dennis Kelso, the head of the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. They've been making statements, we've had all this activity, and yet nothing is happening out there. Today, worries spread along with the oil as the slick approaches an important fish hatchery. Details now from Sumner McLeish of member station KTOO.
Some 20,000 feet of boom taken from Navy stockpiles around the country are en route to Valdez now as a light oil sheen makes its way towards the Armand cornering fish hatchery where millions of pink salmon are being held. The hatchery is crucial to Prince William Sound fishermen, and an all-out effort is being made to cordon off the region leading into the hatchery. Meanwhile, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game said today it will not open the Prince William Sound herring fisheries. Depressing but not unexpected news at this point to area fishermen who take in about $11 million from the fisheries each year. The toll on marine life in the Sound is mounting. Thousands of dead birds and many sea otters are being discovered as workers get out onto some of the more remote beaches in the Sound. And Don Byron of the State Department of Environmental Conservation says many workers are discouraged by what they are finding.
The mood is that it's an overwhelming job, that it's something we can't really fix but we're doing what we can and we'll do everything we can, and it's better to do what we can than to just throw up our hands and do nothing.
It is now estimated that over 800 miles of shoreline in the Sound has been contaminated by the oil. Offloading oil from the supertanker continues today, and Exxon officials believe they will be able to try refloating the Exxon Valdez by Wednesday. There has been no decision yet on where the tanker will be repaired, but several sites are under consideration. At an afternoon press conference today, Exxon Shipping Company President Frank Iarossi said the company still does not know the whereabouts of Captain Joseph Hazelwood. The state of Alaska has filed criminal charges against Hazelwood, and Larry Weeks, chief of Alaska's criminal division, says the state will try to extradite the former captain of the Exxon Valdez if he does not return to Alaska voluntarily. For National Public Radio, this is Sumner McLeish in Juneau, Alaska.
This program is a production of National Public Radio. The views expressed are not necessarily those of NPR, the underwriters, or the broadcast station.
Good morning. From National Public Radio in Washington, I'm David Malpas. We're standing by for a live presidential press conference and announcement from the White House. President George Bush let it be known a few minutes ago that he will be coming into the press room in the White House to make a statement regarding the Alaskan oil spill. We don't know exactly what he's going to say, but it may involve more federal intervention and assistance in that oil spill. He is also expected to take questions after he makes his statement, and we are told that he will not take questions or elaborate on any answers regarding the Oliver North trial or Secretary Gorbachev's travels, so we don't know if he's going to try to keep it to one subject, the oil spill, but it looks like that's what he intends to do. The oil spill situation has been one that the Bush administration has gotten quite a bit of criticism lately on because of the lack of federal intervention on the issue. The mayor of Valdez, Alaska, and some members of the congressional delegation from Alaska have been criticizing President Bush for not getting the federal government more involved in the cleanup of the oil spill. Yesterday, at a subcommittee hearing here in Washington, the mayor of Valdez, John Devens, said had this same disaster occurred off Long Island or off L.A. or San Francisco, quote, I guarantee you that a declaration of disaster would have been called. We've got to have federal control now, said Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska. And the administration says it's opposed to any federal takeover of the operation. The president's spokesman, however, has said that President Bush may order the military, which is stationed in Alaska, some troops there, to begin help. There have been reports of figures of perhaps 2,000 military people. Don't know exactly how they might help at this point. We are now told that the president will be coming to the podium in about 7 or 8 minutes. With me here is Leanne Hansen, who has been watching this story and talking with Daniel Zwerdling, our environmental reporter here in Washington. Leanne, what can you tell us about some of the problems that Alaska faces right now and what people might want to hear President Bush say?
Well, mainly I think what we might be hearing today is that an announcement that perhaps the federal government might be going in to help with the oil spill. When I was speaking to Danny Zwerdling earlier today, he was talking about the two levels of damage that are going on in Alaska, the first obviously being one that is environmental, the effect of the oil spill on the islands, on the ecology, on the fishing, on everything that has to do with the environment up there. And the second level of damage had to do with the lives of the people up there, the economic damage that's being done with fishermen that were planning for the season, and now they find that perhaps that the people that buy the fish from them might not be interested in buying the fish this year. He also said that the short-term damage of this particular spill is just bordering on devastating. But one interesting thing that he had to say is that the long-term effects of this oil spill might not be as bad as we think they're going to be, that Prince William Sound could actually recover from the effects of this oil spill. So it might be something to keep in mind. But I have the feeling that right now what they're interested in doing is helping to take care of the very right now short-term effects of that particular oil spill. We're still seeing birds that are covered with oil. We're still seeing otters that are covered with oil. In fact, the Animal Rescue Center said that they have counted something like 200 dead birds, and they now have 138 birds, mostly loons and ducks, for helping to clean them up. And unfortunately, about half of the otters that have been brought into this Animal Rescue Center have died. So obviously there is a devastating effect that is going on immediately, and whether or not the federal government, the Coast Guard, whoever is going to be going up there to help out, be interesting to see whether or not they can actually do any good.
Of course, part of the debate, too, has been over how to go about cleaning up this mess. Controversy about using certain chemicals that would help dissipate the oil but have consequences in terms of the sea life and the oil eventually settling on the bottom and damaging sea life there.
Mm-hmm.
There is also quite a bit of debate and controversy about responsibility and who's to blame and so forth. And an interesting development yesterday at a Senate hearing, the head of Exxon, and they are the company that owns the tanker that had the spill, the head of Exxon says he's not going to follow Japanese precedent and resign or kill himself over the Alaska oil spill. And in that Senate hearing, Senator Slade Gorton, a Republican from Washington State, said that everyone takes responsibility from the individual up to the chief executive officer. And he told the Exxon chairman, Lawrence Rawl, quote, "I think your resignation is in order."
Hmm.
And that's what brought the response from Rawl when he said he disagreed. He said a lot of Japanese would kill themselves also, and I refuse to do that.
Well, interestingly enough, apparently it was about 2 weeks ago President George Bush said that they would wait 30 days to see whether or not Exxon would do a good job in cleaning up the oil spill. Now, it has not yet been 30 days. It's only been 16 days since this, or 14 days since this spill happened. So maybe there is now a lot of pressure that maybe Exxon is not doing the kind of job either that it promised to do or that the people up there want to see. So it'll be interesting to see what President Bush has to say, whether or not he's cutting back on this 30-day assessment and actually bringing someone in now. And I think it's a result of some meetings that have been going on about that.
And another development, too, the captain of the ship who was fired from Exxon had his bail reduced to $25,000. You may recall it was raised to $1 million after he had disappeared briefly after this incident. A supervising judge, however, in New York said that that bail that was set by another judge was unconstitutionally excessive, and that there was little chance that the captain, Joseph Hazelwood, would be jumping bail, so he lowered it to $25,000. Hazelwood today posted that bail and left the courtroom without making any comment to reporters. He was the captain in charge and is alleged to have been drunk at the time of the accident, but he was not piloting the ship. He had turned over the command to a third mate who was uncertified to pilot the vessel in these waters off Alaska. This is the nation's largest oil spill, and yet the captain could receive a maximum penalty of 2 years in prison and a $10,000 fine.
Well, they're actually misdemeanors that he's facing, according to the news reports, operating a ship while drunk, reckless endangerment, negligent discharge of oil. And obviously there was that extradition request when he went to New York and went into hiding for a couple of days before he presented himself. So I'm actually a little surprised that it is misdemeanor charges, but unfortunately my knowledge of the law is not such that I couldn't really say what is warranted or not warranted in that respect one would imagine that the fact that he did turn over the control of the tanker to someone who was not qualified to drive this tanker is a very serious charge.
Again, we are waiting for President George Bush to come into the White House press room. That's expected in about 40 seconds now, that he will come in and make a statement about the Alaskan oil spill and probably announce some new action by the federal government. We don't know exactly what yet. It may involve the use of American military troops, perhaps the National Guard and regular Army troops stationed in Alaska in some form of assistance in the cleanup. There may be more to it than that. And again, this while it's a press conference, we're told that the president will limit his answers mainly to this subject and try to steer away from other subjects, even though there's a lot of hot news developing from the Oliver North trial and statements that President Bush will need to respond to at some point.
Mm-hmm. There's also been the news where Mikhail Gorbachev in the United Kingdom has basically cut back on uranium for producing nuclear weapons. There just seems to be a lot of news today, so it will be interesting to see how much time the president does spend on the Alaska oil spill. To just update a little bit about some of the efforts that are going on as we speak in Alaska to try and contain the damage from the oil spill. Apparently local fishermen are trying to save a hatchery. And yesterday it was characterized as the Alamo. You had this image of these local fishermen trying to stave back, you know, the effect of the oil spill. But Danny Zwerdling, our environmental correspondent, called there yesterday and said, actually, the news that's being reported about this hatchery is not as bad as they say it is. They say they're still in good shape. Obviously, wind and tides is going to have an amazing effect on what happens with this hatchery, but local fishermen are still trying to protect it. But they are very frustrated with this very slow cleanup that's been going on there. And they're not the only ones. Apparently, Alaska legislators are introducing several bills that are designed to prepare the state in the event of future spills, which sounds rather pessimistic, but an ounce of prevention, etc., is worth a pound of cure.
Just a word of explanation to our audience. If we sound a little bit out of breath or a little bit unprepared here, President Bush is getting in the habit here of not giving the media a great deal of warning time about his appearances and announcements and press conferences. Very little warning time on this one. We hear some noise there in the background from the White House, so we're expecting the president to enter momentarily and begin taking questions. And we don't know exactly how long this will run, usually about 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
One other item, Admiral Paul Yost, the Commandant of the Coast Guard, has cautioned against federal control of this cleanup operation. He has said that he doesn't want federalization of this spill, and he feels that if that happened, it would let Exxon off the hook. And they would be able to close their checkbook and, in effect, force the federal government to pay for the cleanup costs. So his argument is one of if the federal government comes in, Exxon gets off the hook. That's one explanation. We see now that the White House podium is still empty, but we're expecting President Bush to come in momentarily and let us know what he has to say and take questions.
There seems to be a little bit of activity, but no sign of President George Bush yet. Something that Danny said as he was flying over Prince William Sound, one thing that he didn't realize is how big the sound is. And he found himself in a plane for at least 2 hours before he was able to see any sign at all of the oil spill. He referred to the oil spill as being rather democratic or undemocratic. Apparently it would go into inlets of certain islands and leave other islands completely alone. So it will be interesting to watch and see how this cleanup is done, given the nature of the oil, the nature of the tides, the nature of the winds in Prince William Sound. I'd also be interested to find out what sort of court cases and litigation is going to happen from this oil spill. I imagine they can go on for years to come, particularly with that second level of damage that I mentioned earlier, the damage to the lives and the economy of the fishermen who live up there. One can imagine that even after the oil is cleaned up, the cases in court could go on for quite a while.
As I said, President Bush will try to keep the subject here to the oil spill, but there will certainly, I would think, be questions asked about the Oliver North trial, which has gotten very interesting lately with the release now of a government document which shows that the Bush administration, or rather the Reagan administration, with George Bush actively involved, were attempting to circumvent Congress's ban on aid to the Nicaraguan Contras by getting assistance to the Contras through third parties, through other countries, and that there was a rather detailed and organized effort that went beyond Oliver North to seek contributions and assistance from these other countries to the Contras, with the United States in some way promising a quid pro quo assistance for those countries. It's a little unclear how direct that was. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. But there's certainly an implication here that was what was going on, and that George Bush, according to these documents, was involved in that.
But it's doubtful that he would address any question that has to do with the trial of Oliver North, obviously because that trial is still going on, and one has the feeling, should someone ask him a question about the Oliver North trial, we could be vamping until ready for the rest of the rest of the press conference, and he would absolutely turn it over to someone else. I do understand he's going to be making a brief statement, and we're waiting to hear, first of all, when the president will arrive in the conference room, and two, what that statement will be. We were told that he was going to go onto the podium at about 20 minutes to 11 Eastern Daylight Time. Obviously, we have gone past that mark, and we are just trying to think about what he might have to say and what kind of questions. David, if you were there, if you were at this press conference, what would you ask him?
Well, I guess the main question is why the federal government is not more deeply involved, since it is such a massive oil spill. They do not have the equipment there to do it on their own. And it would seem that the federal government would have the resources and want to get more involved. We see now that coming into the White House press room are a number of people. We believe these are perhaps experts on cleaning up oil spills. And we see President Bush coming to the podium now.
I have a statement and then be glad to take a few questions and then refer them to our experts here. But virtually every American is familiar with the tragic environmental disaster in Alaskan waters. And more than 10 million gallons of oil have been spilled, with deadly results for wildlife and hardship for local citizens. We all share the sorrow and concern of Alaskans and the determination to mount a sustained cleanup effort. Our ultimate goal must be the complete restoration of the ecology and the economy of Prince William Sound, including all of its fish, marine mammals, birds, and other wildlife. The Exxon Corporation has acknowledged responsibility for this spill and its liability for the damages. Exxon should remain responsible for both damages and for employing civilian personnel necessary to control further damage. However, Exxon's efforts, standing alone, are not enough. And after consulting with the congressional delegation, Senator Ted Stevens, Senator Frank Murkowski, Congressman Don Young, I have determined to add additional federal resources to the cleanup effort, in addition to the considerable federal personnel and equipment already on the scene. And this new effort will focus on the job of helping recover oil now in the water and restoring beaches and other damaged areas. This effort should not in any way relieve Exxon from any of its responsibilities or its liabilities. I've asked Sam Skinner, our Secretary of Transportation, to serve as the coordinator of the efforts of all federal agencies involved in the cleanup and to work with the Alaskan authorities and Exxon. Admiral Paul Yost, the commandant of the Coast Guard, will return to Alaska to assume the personal oversight of developments. As we all know, the Coast Guard has many assets in place right now. Also at my direction, Defense Secretary Dick Cheney will make available U.S. Armed Forces personnel and equipment to assist in the cleanup. The military will provide personnel for direct cleanup activities, as well as assisting with logistics, the needs of logistics related to the cleanup. And of course, these efforts must be undertaken carefully so that further damage to fragile areas will not occur. Intensive planning now going on, as well as appropriate cleanup training, will be completed before ground units are actually deployed. In addition to the Department of Defense personnel, I've asked my staff to develop plans to enable... volunteers to participate in cleanup activities. By summer, we hope to have developed facilities to enable us to accommodate a corps of Alaskan volunteers. And when I say develop facilities, as these gentlemen will tell you, we're dealing with very remote areas in some cases here. I've asked EPA Administrator Bill Riley to coordinate the long-range planning to restore the environment of the sound. EPA will draw on the expert of leading scientists and oil spill experts in this work, and it will also consult with other federal agencies that are assessing scientific data regarding the effects of the spill. We'll not forget the residents of Alaska who have suffered extraordinary economic loss, and when you talk to these congressmen, as I have, and get it brought home on case-by-case basis, we have to be concerned, and we are concerned. In addition to paying damage claims against it, we encourage Exxon to increase its local hiring for the cleanup efforts. Secretary Skinner will also work with Exxon and appropriate agencies to develop appropriate loan assistance programs to assist those who have suffered economic injury. This situation has demonstrated the inadequacy of existing contingency plans. And consequently, I have directed a nationwide review of contingency plans of this type to determine improvements that may be necessary. In describing these measures, we should not be under any illusions. The job of cleaning up the oil from both the sea and the affected land areas will be massive, prolonged, and frustrating. Nothing we can do will totally resolve this problem in the short term. Rather, we must be prepared for a long, sustained effort. Learning from this experience, we also rededicate ourselves to transportation safety and to realistic planning for accidents that do occur. At the same time, our national security interest in the domestic energy supplies should not be forgotten. The excellent safety record that was recorded prior to this incident must be restored and maintained consistently into the future. Secretary Skinner and Administrator Riley will make brief statements, and they, Secretary Cheney and others, will be available to answer questions. Prior to that, let me just take a couple of questions, and then I want to keep the focus, if possible, on this, so fire away. Yeah.
Now we go.
Okay. A number of local officials in Alaska, as well as Alaskan residents, have been complaining virtually since this spill took place for a greater federal role. I guess my question would be, why has it taken so long to reach this conclusion, and hasn't valuable time been lost during your deliberation?
Well, as you may recall, action started immediately. The big thing was to get the ship, stop the hemorrhaging, and get that ship moved. I immediately asked the head of the Coast Guard, the head of the Department of Transportation, and Bill Riley to go up there. They came back and upon sound advice, recommended that we not federalize, and let me be clear, we are not federalizing this operation. There is no demand for from reasonable people to federalize this operation, and that is not going to be done. So what have we done? The flow was stopped. And let me be very clear, I give great credit, certainly in some of those that are working out there, volunteers, private side, local citizens, company and everything else for stopping. But I also give great credit to the Coast Guard and to military assets that have already been used in moving equipment thousands of miles to stop the flow. And I'll tell you, a lot has been done. I've had a talk here with Bill Riley about protecting the hatcheries, and I don't want to make premature judgments on this, but it looks like the five hatcheries may have been saved. And now is that an overstatement? And now the cleanup phase comes, and it's the time when we can step up some activity. So something has gone on. I'm not about to defend the status quo, but there is no desire on our part to federalize. We're not going to do it. And I think it's fair to point this out. I think the priorities were right. There is four times as much oil in that ship as spilled out of that ship. And it was important to stop, to be guaranteed, even in rough elements up there, that no more escape. And so some things have happened. It was prudent to contain that spill. And so the process is going forward. Yeah, Brett.
Do you have a sense yet of how much this federal effort is going to cost? And will you try to recover from Exxon that amount?
As I said, Exxon is liable, and they will continue to be liable, and we don't at this point have a full assessment. Leslie?
Take the court on that, sir?
Sir?
Is that you going to follow up and take them to court?
I think Exxon is assumed liability, and I'm not going to stand here and suggest otherwise. Yeah, Ellen, and then Tom, and then we'll go up here.
Mr. President, you've used words like deadly, tragic, and disastrous to describe this oil spill. During the campaign, you said you were an environmentalist. Have you had any opportunity to rethink your commitment to drilling in the Arctic Wildlife Refuge as a result of this disaster?
Yeah, I've had the opportunity.
And what have you decided, sir?
No, I don't think that you compromise the genuine national security interests of this country. And I don't think that you can predicate a sound national energy policy on an aberration that seemed to have taken place in Prince William Sound. And if for those that do, I say, please let me follow logically. Are you suggesting, because of the alleged human error of a pilot of a ship in Prince William Sound, that we shut down all the offshore production in the Gulf of Mexico? Is that the suggestion? If so, I oppose it. And I think we've got to do what I said in this statement. Do everything humanly possible here and elsewhere, on land and on sea, to see that we have the soundest environmental practice and reserve in terms of putting out fires or stemming the flow of oil that leaks out, gets away. But I am not going to suggest that because of this, we should rethink a policy of trying to get this country less dependent on foreign oil.
Yeah. Mr. President, you said earlier that you don't want to defend the status quo in Alaska. You sound sometimes like you're defending Exxon. Are you satisfied with their performance since the spill?
No.
What have they done wrong? What could they have done better?
Let these experts tell you. I'm not satisfied with anything about it when we have a risk to the environment like this, because Ellen was telling you correctly. I feel very, very strongly about the damage to our environment there, to the fisheries, to the lives of people involved there, and to all of that. So I'm not totally satisfied. Yeah, I'm going to take two more. We're taking too much time away from the people that are really most thoroughly involved with this. Besides, they were getting off Marlin's schedule. Thank you for your understanding.
Let me make one more subject change, if I may, sir. You've said a couple of times your minimum wage offer is your last and best. Does that mean you feel that the package being debated on the Hill now, the Democrats' package, is worse than no bill at all, sir?
Well, there are several packages being debated, but I've told you, in terms of the increase And the length of time for the training wage, we did something unusual. We fired our best shot and last shot and only shot first. And I'd like to take this opportunity to say what I heard several of our leaders saying yesterday after the meeting. I have no intention of budging one inch on this, and I got too much at stake to change right now, and I'm not going to. And so that's what we've done, and I know it's an unusual procedure. The Secretary of Labor made her position very, very clear in this, and there we are. Yeah.
I'm going to ask one last question on this bill. You said that the cleanup would be protracted. How long do you think it's going to take? A number of years? And is there any real expectation this will ever be cleaned up?
Well, I think we've got to hope that it is. I think Santa Barbara, I would say, has been pretty well cleaned up. I'd say that the spill of the Amoco Cadiz, which was six times as big as this, has been cleaned up. And so we've got to aspire to standards that make me be able to tell the people of Alaska and people that are concerned all over this country, yes, we can shoot for that standard, and we have history to point to. But I think what we do now will determine how fast we can say that it has been done. And that's why we want to move as quickly. We got it. All right, last one in the middle. Owen, sorry, Tom.
Can you tell me if you believe the political agreement reached in Poland this week could be a model for political reforms throughout?
But I really do have to run, and I'll just turn this over now to Sam Skinner, and I know they'll, and the congressmen and senators.
Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Not at all. Well, good luck, and I hope we can.
Thank you very much, Mr. President.
We want to help, and we care about what's happening up there in Alaska.
I'm going to be real short, John.
All right.
I'm going to be real short.
You've been listening to President George Bush at a live press conference at the White House. He was flanked by the Director of the Environmental Protection Agency, the Secretary of Transportation, the Secretary of Defense, and the entire Alaska congressional delegation, as he announced that the federal government would become more involved in the cleanup operations of the Alaskan oil spill. He said Exxon, the company that owns the ship responsible for the spill, remains responsible for damages and cleanup, but he said that's not enough, that there will need to be additional federal resources to focus on the cleanup of the beaches and remove the oil from the seas. He said this would involve the use of U.S. military forces who could assist in logistics, moving equipment and so forth, and provide personnel for direct cleanup actions. He also talked about creating a option for volunteers to participate in the cleanup, and talked about this going on into the summer, and he said that many of the areas are remote and it would be necessary to get volunteers and others working to do a lot of this work by hand. He also talked about a review of loan assistance programs to help those who have been damaged economically by this, and said that the programs were inadequate as they have reviewed them. He said the job ahead is massive, prolonged, it will be frustrating, and require a sustained effort, but he said that there was great hope that the cleanup could be successful and that the spill would not do great lasting damage. He also said that, in response to a question, that there was no need to rethink the U.S. policy of oil exploration and production in other parts of Alaska or on offshore oil drilling elsewhere. He called this accident an aberration that should not prevent our policy of getting the U.S. less dependent on foreign oil. And when questions came up repeatedly about the Oliver North trial and the Contra connection and President Bush's involvement in that when he was vice president in funneling money from third countries, trying to get those countries to contribute to the Contra effort, the president would not take any questions on that subject. He said it would it could prejudice the trial that's going on, so he declined repeatedly to address those issues. Our engineer today is Lorna White, the producer John Ogulnik, and also thanks to Leanne Hansen. I'm David Malpas. Good morning from National Public Radio in Washington.
Support for this program is provided by this and other NPR member stations and the NPR News and Information Fund. Contributors include the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation for a coverage of health care issues, for historical reporting, the Pew Charitable Trusts, the Geraldine R. Dodge Foundation for reporting on biological resource issues, and the Eaton Foundation. This program is a production of National Public Radio. The views expressed are not necessarily those of NPR, the underwriters, or the broadcast station. This is NPR, National Public Radio.